Here, so we can get started. I'll turn it over to the chair.
All right. Thank you, Marvin. Well, let's see. The date is September 24th, 2020, and the time is 9:06 a.m. I'm calling to order the regular quarterly meeting of the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association's Board of Directors. This is a virtual or video conference only board meeting that is being conducted in accordance with Governor Abbott's March 16th, 2020 directive on virtual and telephonic open meetings. Currently, we have 8 board members and 1 vacancy, and all board members are in attendance, so a quorum is present. I would like to welcome our 3 new board members to their first official meeting and acknowledge that they all attended the training that Marvin and his staff organized. And I'd like to give them each just a very brief opportunity to provide a brief introduction. We can start with Michelle.
Great. Thank you, Joe Betsy. And good morning, everyone. My name is Michelle Ballady. I'm with Travelers. I'm Vice President of Government Relations, and I am based in Las Vegas. I like to joke that I'm the Area 51 of the insurance industry because I work and operate at an undisclosed location in the desert. So that's all I'll say about my location. I've been with Travelers for 18 years. And while I'm in the government relations arena and dapple in all lines, I'm very, very excited to be here today because I do come to the table as a current board member here in Nevada of the Guarantee Fund Association in the Silver State. So I'm hoping that my experience in Nevada and my soon-to-be experience in here in Texas, well, here virtually, will overall just benefit us as an industry overall. So I'm just very pleased to be here, and I'm looking forward to working with everybody.
Great. Okay. Thank you. And next we'll go to Mark, and we're going to let everybody listen up so you can learn how to pronounce Mark's name. We're thinking about just calling him Mark T because I was spitting when I tried to say it yesterday.
No, I'm good with that. A lot of people call me Mark T, so appreciate that, Joe Betsy. My name is Mark, and last name is Tsutsui. And so if you get close, you get credit for that. So, and that last name is Japanese, for those that are curious. I've been with State Farm for 28 years. I'm a claims section manager. I've got experience managing operations for 7 different states, and I've worked in California, Illinois, Minnesota, and I've been here in Austin for the last 5 years. Most of my experience is auto claims, but I have a little bit of experience with homeowners and catastrophe claims, but I also have significant claims litigation experience for first party and third party claims. So again, I'm really excited about joining the board, and I really appreciate your support of my nomination. And I'm looking forward to working with you all as we support the TPCIGA.
Thanks so much, Mark. And now we'll go to Larry, our first actuarial board member. So we're excited about that.
Thank you so much. I live in Austin, Texas. I am currently a retired actuary. I had a career of about 40 years. The last 13 years were in insurance regulation. First, I worked for the Kansas Insurance Department in Topeka, Kansas as their chief actuary. And then I moved to Kansas City and worked for the NAIC, where I retired at the end of 2018. And then prior to that, I worked for 3 major insurance companies in various positions as a life insurance actuary. Currently, I still do some volunteer work. I chair a valuation basic table team for the Society of Actuaries, and I'm on their individual life experience committee. Those 2 committees develop mortality tables that are used in insurance valuation, in particular life insurance valuation. So I'm not a property and casualty actuary, but I know a lot about risk and how to manage risk. And like the other 2 board members, I'm very happy and proud to join this group. And I hope I can offer some contributions as we move forward. So thank you.
Joe Betsy, you're on mute.
All right, thank you. Knew that would happen at some point today, so I'm glad we got it over with. Typically, we announce who's here. Right now, just for the Guarantee Association, it's Marvin, and as he said, others will take his chair throughout the meeting. It looks like, just from the screen, that we have in attendance from the Department of Insurance, Tina Arendall, John Alexander, James Kennedy, Caitlin Marek, Patty Otto, Brian Rui, I don't know how to say that last name, and John Peters. I don't know if I missed anyone. And then I'd like to also just remind everybody that we do have members of the board that are competitors in the marketplace, and therefore we must all exercise care in avoiding any discussions that might give rise to an allegation of violation of state and federal antitrust laws. So please speak up if you identify that we approach any of those marks. Now we'll move on to item number two on the agenda, which is the review and approval of the summary of the official minutes of the June 11th, 2020 regular meeting of the Board of Directors. Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion here.
Is that Mike Wilson?
Yes.
And then is there a second?
Yeah, this is Tiffany. I'll second it.
Okay, so Mike Wilson makes the motion. Tiffany Reiner seconds. Is all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposition? Any one wanting to abstain? Hearing none, then the motion carries unanimously. We will now move into item number three, which is the executive session, which is authorized by section 551.079 of the Texas Government Code. The board will adjourn into a closed executive session to consider the Texas Department of Insurance rehabilitation and liquidation.
Okay, we're ready.
Okay, so the time is now 9:38 a.m. and the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors has concluded its executive session with the Texas Department of Insurance. The board does not need to take any action stemming from the executive session. So we will move on to agenda item number four, which is the executive director's report on management steps to contain the spread of COVID-19 at the TPSIGA offices. Marvin?
All right, thank you. Prior to the report, I just want to walk through the agenda in reference to who's going to be presenting and who's going to support staff person that will be assisting with that. If you'll turn and look at your agenda packet, and the agenda packet will be the foundation of what we're talking about today. All the detailed materials are in your agenda packet. So what's going to be showing up on the screen are basically bullet points, and the different chairs and the different committees will speak to those bullet points. So if you look at the agenda, the Finance and Audit Committee report for committee follows me. The chair of that committee, Tiffany Reiner, will go through the budget information as well as the audit information technology updates, and she'll be assisted by our CFO, John D'Amato. Following the Finance and Audit Committee report, it goes back to our chair, the executive committee, and the chair will be speaking to the plan of operation as well as the committee membership. Since we have three new board members, you'll probably be elected to some committee, but the chair will tell you exactly what opportunities are available. Following that, the chair of the Human Resources Committee is Mike Wilson, and he'll be presenting information on our telecommuting policy with the assistance of Berta Ruff, the Human Resources Director. And finally, the last part of that is our big hitter, that's claims. Jesse Wood will be doing a claim summary, providing information on that. I would ask if you would turn under the agenda packet, the executive committee report. Here's an executive director report, and attached to that is all the information in reference to what we did as it related to COVID. But what I wanted to do is start off by giving you a little bit of background in reference to this entire scenario. When we first, we do have a disaster recovery plan. You see under overview, the second bullet, we have a disaster recovery plan that's extensive, but it was to deal with catastrophic events like hurricanes, tornadoes. We never had any expectation of dealing with a pandemic. So like everyone else, we weren't prepared. Our system internally is set up to operate out of our particular office, not to operate remotely. And we ran into a few issues that we got resolved over time. But one of the first things that we did when we knew we were going out of the office is we considered ourselves an essential business operation. And there were orders put out by the mayor and the governor. They kept going back and forth with different orders. But as a result, we knew we had to have our employees coming into the office to continue processing claims. So we actually put together letters that employees could carry and come back into the office in case they were stopped and when they were driving into the office. So we gave letters just explaining that these were essential employees and would be operating at the office just in case. Computer access issues. Like I said, we have an internal system, and it's not everybody works off of that system. What we ran into when we went out of here is we had licenses, and we only had so many licenses for people to operate. So even though we were operating remotely, the claims adjusters would log into the system, but the system slowed down because there were so many people. So we didn't have enough licenses for people to operate remotely. And we kind of addressed that problem. One of the other issues that came up was laptops. Again, we had very limited numbers of laptops that were available. I think we had 3 or 4. And again, we weren't thinking about, when we went out, we didn't know what period of time we would be out. We expected to be back in the office. Licenses, laptops. One of the things that a lot of people never thought about was internet access. We had employees that don't have internet access. And that's just not something we thought about because everyone's here operating internally. And equipment. So one of the first things we did is we tried to identify equipment that could be used by our employees working remotely. We asked some of the employees if they had laptops of their own personal laptops. And we had them bring them in, and we put all the different security items on those laptops and continued to operate. Luckily, we had a number of old systems that were still here. We have an IT policy, and every 5 years we're supposed to look at the hardware and software. So those old systems, we were able to take those and get those to our employees so that they could operate. Now, we thought we had resolved a major problem with that. What happened is once people started using those systems and they logged into our system, it slowed the speed of being able to access claims information. So our claims director came up with a system to have people log in at different times. You know, from one time to another time, individuals would work on those particular systems. So again, there were just a number of things that we reacted to. We would continue to communicate with the board, advising them as to what we were doing, what actions we were taking. And at the same time as we're going through all this, we had continuing insolvencies. They didn't stop. We had like 3 or 4 insolvencies that came in within that period of time, and we were working with the department to address those. One thing I will point out is a couple years ago, the insurance department initiated a program where they bought laptops for all their employees. I don't think they were anticipating a pandemic. It's just something that they did. So they were in a position where they were able to operate from remote locations. They ran into problems as well, and John can speak to that, or anyone in from the department, in terms of people being able to access the systems. Some of the same things that we ran into, because they thought they would be coming back just like we thought we would. And the last part of it, I'll point out, if you'll take a look at the overview, that's detailed information concerning what we had actually done. But the part that I'll speak to is the on-site safety procedures and the actions that we took based on the guidelines that were given to us by the governor and the mayor. And if you recall, a number of those things came from different judges as well. Williamson County's judge had certain requirements, and Travis County had certain requirements. So all these different governmental agencies were coming out with different requirements for how you could operate. But if you'll take a look, here's where we are right now. We've limited office access, to staff and service providers, meaning that we're still operating in a remote type operation. The adjusters more so are operating at their homes, but we have all the employees, like we had file room, mail room, different things. They're coming into the office, but we have 30,000 square feet, so we're able to social distance. So we have people in different locations. We have mandatory mask wearing, so everybody has to wear a mask. Before you come into the building, you have to, one of the directors have to come out at your car to check your temperature. We also provide Clorox wipes, tissues, hand sanitizer at every desk. We also, every week or every other week, we have someone that comes in to spray the office. So you have to cover all your equipment, and we have the office sprayed on a regular rotation each and every month. So those are a few of the things that we've done in reference to our response to COVID. Where we are right now today, we are back to operating 8 to 5, but everyone's not in the office. We have people still working remotely, but we have the file room, the mail room, individuals coming in, and we're working here 8 to 5, and the directors are here. And like I said, before anybody comes into the building, they have to get temperature checks, including outside contractors or different individuals. We've cut off training, basically. We've changed the interior of our operations in terms of the break room, where we took chairs out so people can't convene in those areas. We're not having any different events that we normally have. We eat for any occasion around here, and we stop that. We can't bring food into the office, and we don't provide food for our employees. Contractors are not coming into the office at all. One of the things that, and I'm quite sure everybody's experiencing this, most of our operations are operating remotely, and most of our training is moved to operating remotely. Matter of fact, I saw here locally with Insurance Council of Texas, they're going to do a virtual meeting, and the NAIC has changed to virtual meetings as well. So we've kind of followed suit with that, and I think that pretty much, if anyone has questions in terms of what we've done.
Marvin, it's Mike. I have a question. Have you guys posted visual prompts and guidelines at key locations to remind people of safety procedures?
Yeah, we have things posted throughout the office, all the way around the office. And it basically, we emphasize that on a regular basis. While we were out, I actually sent several emails to employees to keep them informed as to what actions we were taking in reference to that. And also asking them if they had exposure or family members had to exposure. And we had a couple of incidents where someone came up with a false negative, and we immediately had that individual quarantine themselves for that period of time. Recently, we had another one of our employees where a family member came up with exposure, and that person did come up, was not positive, but we went through the quarantine process as well. So those are the things that we've done in order to protect the employees and their families.
What number of employees are currently coming to the office? I get that they're not all coming on the same day necessarily. And what service providers specifically are coming to the office?
We don't have any service providers coming to the office.
The example that you can give, Marvin, would be when the people were coming in to finish up the work on the AV system. That's what you meant when you were referring to contractors.
Okay, when we, one exception is when we had the AV system put in, all this video equipment, the contractors came into the office, but of course they went through temperature checks, and we limited them to this particular area, which was the boardroom, so they, there was no exposure of those outside contractors to employees. But for the most part, we've stopped anyone coming into the building except employees. The number of employees that are here at any one time, 10 to 15?
We average 18 employees. On any given day. Some days it's more, some days it's less, but if you average it through, it's going to be 18.
And what Verda is saying, you can't see her, she's off to the side, we average about 18 employees in the office. And since we have the 30,000 square feet, we have the social distancing in place. We have, so people are 6 feet apart, and spread throughout the organization. Other questions?
I have a question, Marvin, and maybe I misunderstood it in looking at your notes and how you explained your temperature checks.
Right.
I thought I heard you say once they're in the building, a supervisor will go check their temperature. Did I understand that?
No, okay. What we do is John and Verter are my temperature directors.
Sure.
They have to call either one of those individuals, and then we go to their car and check their temperature.
Okay, good. That's right. I wanted to check. Okay, perfect. Yeah, I don't want, I got the impression they were already in the building, and then you were checking their temperature, and I wanted to make sure. I thought.
I will tell you, no, you know, we do that with everyone. I have my own little temperature deal. I do my own, and then Jesse tries to sneak in, and I'll do his once in a while.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Well, Marvin, I had one. Regarding the remote connections, have there been any concerns on the security of the transactions that go back and forth, or do you feel everything is very secure?
What happened is, and that's a very good question, the board actually, because we ran into these issues with operating remotely, the board passed an amendment to our budget that allowed us to go out and buy laptops so that we could provide those and people weren't using the personal equipment. And security was one of the concerns, you know, a person's system could be tapped or whatever. We do a lot of stuff with cyber training around here, so that was a major concern for us. And that's why we kind of used our systems. We downloaded everybody's equipment, and when the board approved the amendment, we went out and purchased another 35 laptops. And now everybody has working off our system, so we don't have the same concerns in terms of cybersecurity.
Marvin, you had mentioned that, you know, through this process, we discovered that several employees did not have internet access.
Right.
So I've got two questions. One, was that driven more by geography or finances? And how many employees currently don't have internet access?
It was more geography, because we have a number of employees that work in far locations, whether it's Houston or San Antonio. We had people for 25 years driving here from San Antonio, Houston, out by Liberty, or different locations throughout, and they just didn't have personal choice, didn't have internet. So one of the things, when we presented that amendment to the budget, one of the things the board approved was buying the laptops, but also dealing with the issue. Here. And I'm not an IT expert. VoIP, I don't know what VoIP is, but I know we
How
got
much time
it.
Do you have on a break, David? You want to go for a walk?
I was saying that we were able to address those issues with the employees that were impacted.
Yeah, did have we got time for a quick walk.
I can't hear someone. Was there another question? Okay. So we were able to address those particular concerns by providing access through the laptops, and also through the third component of the amendment that was passed by the board, which we're rolling out in this budget year. We projected that for this year. We had three different components.
21 will be void.
Okay, 2021 will be the void. The other two components we've already put in place, and that addressed some of the issues that were raised by the board, some of the concerns that came up in reference to how we operate.
So, Martin, I'm sorry, I may have missed it. So, at this time, I understand we distributed the laptops and worked on the security and whatnot, but how many employees that have a need to log on don't have internet access at this point?
Everybody has access.
That's what I wanted to hear. Thanks.
Hey, Marvin, I have a quick question. Is your operation completely paperless, and do the employees not have print capability at home? And if they do, what's the security protocol for any confidential information being printed at home?
Yeah, we have the image right system. So, you know, we're paperless, basically. And I don't think people have access to confidential information. Wouldn't be.
They don't print at home.
They don't print anything at home. Everything's printed up here internally.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? regardless of the question, I'll never be able to tell you about IT and VoIP. I have to leave that to John D'Amato, our CFO. So if I'm finished with that, I'll turn it over to the chair of the Finance and Audit Committee, Tiffany Ryan.
Well, wait a minute, Marvin. I just wanted to acknowledge that we've also had Reagan Elmer from the Department of Insurance join us just to keep our record straight. And now we'll move on to item number five with Tiffany Reiner, the Chair of Finance and Audit.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me okay? All right. So we have a couple of items. And so the first thing is I will talk about the operating budget, the annual audit plan, and an IT update. And John D'Amato, so our CFO, will come in and talk about a couple of other items here that are on the agenda, as well as help me out throughout. So as we go through this, I would just direct everyone's attention, if you're using the book, to page 4 of the Finance and Audit Committee section. I don't think I have the access to change what's on the screen. Yep. Okay. So here, this is our 2021 budget and what it represents. So as we go through it and compare it to 2021, for 2021, we are looking at about a 3.1% reduction, or $184,000 from the original 2020 budget. So those reductions are outlined over pages 2, 3, in the packet, and there are a few larger ones that I would like to point out. The first being that we are reducing the number of positions from 40 to 39, and that does account for about $23,000 and change of the reduction. Some of that reduction was offset, as we did have some additional salary requirements. So as we brought on our new CFO, so John, into the fold. But overall, we are looking at a reduction. The next one is that with COVID and everything that has been happening over the last several months, it has affected like education, travel, professional meetings, all of those things that we would normally be out and about doing. A lot of that has transitioned to online, which is reducing our cost. So we are looking at a reduction of $31,500. So we do expect that it is not going to be a complete reduction next year. So we are anticipating and budgeting for some cost associated with all of these line items, and that will start in second or third quarter. Mm-hmm. The next one I would jump down to is the furniture and equipment line. So this is, we did have, as Marvin mentioned earlier, the audio and visual equipment installed in the boardroom. So great video, which is first, so enjoying the video today. But we won't have that expense next year, and so it is a substantial decrease in our budget for the furniture and equipment of 62%, or $49,220. The next large one is computer systems. And so the board had approved the amendment to purchase all of the laptops and the security software and everything that was needed to continue operating during the COVID and the shutdown. That was a substantial cost to us, but we will not have that need for new laptops for everyone next year. So we are reducing our budget by the cost of that, as well as we have completed the CAPS system upgrades. So it's a total decrease of $107,500, or a 27% decrease in our overall computer systems budget. And then the very last item on the list is our telephone line item. And so we did have to purchase some additional capabilities. We will not have that need next year, so we will be reducing the budget respectively, so about $21,000. So in total, it is $184,000 reduction, or 3.1%. Any questions on any of those line items? Okay. All right, so we'll go ahead and move forward. As we, there is also in here the projection for 2020 to 2021. And so this includes all the amendments, everything else. We are still coming in under budget for next year as compared to this year, even after the additional costs and everything that we have undertaken. So on page 5 is our annual audit plan notes. So this is, we will have our regular audit cadence take place with Plant Moran. I have met with Maureen from Plant Moran, and we have talked through the preliminary audit plan and testing of internal controls. Next steps for that is over the next 6 to 8 weeks, we will determine the additional controls that need to be tested. And so we will need to get those to her around mid-November or so. They are not currently planning to come on site for the audit as they have in the past. They are planning to do the work remotely. If by some magical wand the economy opens up and travel restrictions are lifted, then they would plan to come on site.
Mm-hmm. And Tiffany, if I can just interject there, the good news on that is if they're doing the audit remotely, that would be a reduction in overall audit fees because we wouldn't have the travel expense attached to it. What we have here right now incorporates projected travel associated with their two on-site visits. So we'll see an additional reduction then.
Yeah, and so for now, I think to that point, we are planning for them to come on site, but they are not currently planning to come unless there is a change and things open up and we don't have fears anymore of having contractors on site. So, all right, so the third item here is the information technology update. And within your board packet, there is a page under tab B. And I'm waiting for the screen to catch up here. Okay, oop, there it was.
Yep.
Okay, so under tab B here, this is a list of the ongoing security improvements that are taking place now or have taken place. And so as we have allocated additional funds to cover these, we've had increased need for security improvements, as I believe Mark pointed out earlier. So just a couple of things to go over here. One is the transition to the new and advanced virus malware protection application. So definitely this is something that we needed to do. And so that is ongoing and looking good. We also have all the new laptops. And within those laptops, we have included some software that specifically addresses those four bullet points that are noted there. So, you know, the unauthorized device movement geographically, remote endpoint freeze on demand or with offline timer, sorry, full or selective delete of data from at-risk endpoints if lost or stolen, and firmware protection from tampering. So we're trying to take every precaution that we can to eliminate any possibility of data or any kind of compromise. So, anything to add there, John?
No, I think you covered it quite well. Thank you.
Okay. And then the last bullet point, and we've talked about this a couple of times in our meetings, is the KnowBe4. So this is the phishing testing platform. And so that is continuing forward. And we are going to keep that campaign going. So that is it for the IT update. Yep.
Tiffany, would you like me to go back to the agenda with the notes, or do you want me to go to the exhibits?
It does not matter to me. I'm flipping back and forth. I have the finance stuff in front of me, so whatever's easier for
individuals. Okay. So since you have the talk points, I'll go to the exhibits, and then you'll be able to talk through them. And if you need my assistance, let me know.
Well, so the next one is item number 4, and I am going to hand it back over to John.
Sure.
For the assessment information.
Sure. So if you look at, we're looking at item number 4, And really what this does is it hasn't changed significantly, as you know, from last quarter at all. It's just a historical representation of our assessments and distributions. We haven't had assessments to the industry in a number of years. We don't anticipate anything in 2020 today. Anything can change, certainly, but it's really just a representation of where we are there and with regard to recoveries. You'll see when we get to the next section with regard to cash flows, when we talk about recoveries, we need to remember that recoveries are not really predictable. We have situations where oftentimes there's a big surprise that there's leftover cash. The one thing I just want to emphasize is that historically we had larger estates, workers' comp estates, standard auto riders, but as we move forward, we've got a lot of non-standard auto estates that are cash poor or don't have any cash. So as a consequence of that, the anticipation of future recoveries is pretty slim. And again, it's very, very unpredictable. So we do our best in when we do our cash flows to kind of present that. Anything else to add, Tiffany?
So nothing to add. I just did want to call it, like, we heard about that non-standard auto, but in the board book, I got to find the tab, excuse me here, but it does show the recoveries and as well as the cash and what we have. Here it is. Under tab E.
D.
So yeah. It does go through. And so as you heard, you know, those were auto today related, specifically the first one there that was the main Texas one. Mm-hmm. But for those who are new to this board book, this is included in section E here every time. You can see by line what our reserves are, what cash we have on hand. And so as you move across the years here, being able to see exactly where we are and what we can absorb. So if there's any questions just in how that works, but generally it would go back, for example, in that case, to that auto line there.
Yep. So. And that's built on within our Finance and Audit Committee item, but agenda item number 5. So if you were to look at page 6 of that agenda, you'll see that we highlight a few of the known estates that are coming through the ASI companies and Houston General. Those are lumped into what our projections are for cash flows. Those would be sources and uses of funds. And again, the thing to remember is that with non-standard auto, the average claim is, you know, like $4,000 to $6,000 versus, you know, traditional would be, you know, sometimes triple that on average. So we kind of lump that in there. You'll see that as we present in this attachment E, the 5-year projections, there's no position where we are negative cash in any of the lines of business, be it auto, other, and workers' comp, along with the administrative fund. So we're in good stead there. Any questions?
Okay. All right.
Shall we move to the Northern Trust exhibits?
Yes, please.
Okay. So if in conjunction with this, and actually what I'll do is, we've got the full fund strategy report here. We receive those certainly on a quarterly basis. We're in touch with Northern Trust as well as our money managers, you know, actively. This is the full report. If you were to go to, I'm going to bring you all back to the words associated with this report. Just bear with me. There's a going back to our agenda. Okay, here we are. So you'll see there item 6. That reference is really made to the overall quarterly report that we get from Northern Trust, our custodian, that lumps together the two money managers, Payton Regal and RBC, Royal Bank of Canada. You'll see here basically the asset allocations and the durations have remained generally the same. We did have some rate of return reductions, which we see ourselves recovering from, but overall the portfolio is doing well, and that's really just a function of the conservatism attached to that portfolio. It's mostly bonds. You know, we have certainly, with COVID, had some downgrades that have influenced purchases and sales within that portfolio, but we're in a good overall position from a standpoint of rate of return as well as duration of those investments. So we're in good hands there. And if anybody has any specific questions, I'm happy to go through those here, or if you want to go over them at a later time, I'm happy to do that as well.
Okay. We do have one last item here, the budget variance analysis. And so this is just reporting out on our year to date and how we look. If you flip to G within your board books, I don't know if people are flipping like in paper or online, but there are a couple of things that I do want to call out specifically here. So we are favorable. This is through July end. So for through the first 7 months of the year by 1.8%. And this was driven by a couple of areas, but the biggest is the administrative expenses. And this is due to reductions basically from less travel, more work from home initiatives, less education and development, those types of things. But it added up to $179,000. So we saw a really good savings in there. We do still have, and for those new on the board this quarter, we did have a reduction in force earlier this year. And so with that reduction in force, we did have some pay that we needed to pay out. And so we have an unfavorable employment expense variance that is specifically related to that reduction in force. And it's about $115,000. And so, and then the last budget item, and this is where we did spend more money, and it was that $94,000 on computers. So in upgrading and getting everybody set up with work from home capabilities, as well as the VoIP access, etc. So we are unfavorable there. However, the board did pass an amendment to account for that. So looking at the, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to reference just a couple quick things. This was as of July 31st. I think one or two days ago, I submitted the August financials, and we're still generally in that same position when we look at actuals to budget, and you all should have received those financials.
Okay, so just in total on attachment G here, it does break it down between each of the various categories. You can see that we're doing pretty well this year, and we're coming in under budget in many items by a little bit, but in those items I just highlighted is where we have our largest variances. So we are tracking to do well this year. So. Any questions on the budget variance?
I do have one question, Tiffany. I guess it's not on the budget variance, but it's going back to the 2021 budget. Yeah. Okay, Joe Betsy, if I ask a question as it relates to that, I kind of missed on the salary line on as it relates to, it says 0.0% merit increase for 2021 in the budget. Is that because we have not acted on that, or is that... Is that something we're recommending, no merit increase in 2021?
So, do you want me to speak to that?
Go ahead, John. It's fine. You can take it.
Okay, good. So what we did here within the budget process as a whole, we made a concerted effort to consider making reductions throughout our lines. And that was really driven by what was happening at the state agencies. A lot of the state agencies were mandated a 5% reduction. Historically, the max that we've given for merit has been 3%. So we were able to get some benefit there by not budgeting for merit increases. You'll see in this analysis, we do have a few individuals that will get promoted in the April 21 timeframe, which will influence pay. There'll be two of them. And but other than that, we're not budgeting for merit increases for 21. And we did make cuts along the way to enable for a pretty sizable reduction. It's a 3.1% reduction from the 2020 budget to the 2021 budget.
I'm with you there, and I understand the cuts, and but to me, they're two separate topics.
Okay.
Is whether or not you're going to give a merit increase to your employee base, regardless of the cuts because of positions, et cetera. And I think that's a board decision, a policy decision. And I know agencies are doing what agencies are doing, and we're an agency quasi. But I guess I'm not in favor of no merit increase. Don't think that's what we do. I'm not saying just because we traditionally did 3% that we want to do 3%. I think we ought to follow the same process we've followed in the past. Berta goes through an evaluation of what companies are doing and comes back to the board maybe in December, because I think your adjustments kind of take place in March, but y'all correct me if I'm wrong. That's my memory, and my memory's not what it used to be. But I just want to make sure we're kind of still on that same track, not that we're making a decision to say, because it's here in this book, that without any discussion, a zero merit increase.
It, that is not the case, Mike. So we would come back and do an amendment once we know where we want to be for next year.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And Tiffany, just so you know, I worked with the finance team to make some mechanical changes to our budget process that would simplify making changes like this. So we could easily recast the budget with a push of a button, based on whatever merit you'd like to put in there as the estimate, and then we can recast and provide that amended budget to you, Tiffany. So whenever you want to chat about it, just let me know.
Okay, will do.
Thank you.
Tiffany, it's Mike. At the June meeting, if I recall correctly, management reported that there was no recommendation of a merit increase, but they were recommending a grid shift and a bonus pool. I hope I'm not making that up, but if Berta remembers that discussion, I'd like for her to help us understand what that was about.
Do you want to share?
That is not a discussion that I recall us having at the meeting. We mentioned that we weren't going to be in recommending a merit increase pool. We mentioned that. We mentioned that other companies, based on public studies, were going to provide a merit increase pool, but that TV signal was not. But we did not say that we were going to recommend anything relative to that as a part of this budget.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on the budget, or Tiffany, is there anything that I've omitted?
I think that covers everything.
Great. I'm going to pass the baton on to Berta Rem, our HR director. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
That for something other deals with the budget, or the next item I show is the.
It's Joe Betsy. I'm sorry.
But Tiffany, I had one follow-up question for you. And did we need to take any action today on the 2020 audit plan, or the outside counselor, or is December okay to take that action?
I think historically it's happened, from what I understand, in the Q3 meeting for the audit. Is that right, Tiffany?
So I don't know historically which meeting it has happened in. I can tell you my discussions with Maureen were around that they, what we would be going through in the audit next year, so the traditional items, and then over the next like 6 to 8 weeks, we would put that back to the finance team and figure out two or three additional items that we would like focused on for this year.
Okay.
I believe in our last meeting, we moved to for Plant Moran to do the audit for next year, to engage them.
That's correct. Okay. We did that at the last meeting, so I don't think there's any board action on the audit. And as Tiffany mentioned, I think it's the testing stuff that the committee would define and then advise the board in December.
Yeah, so I think we're good at this point.
Yeah,
and we've never. Yeah, I don't think we've ever had board action on the additional testing items. That was kind of deferred to the finance and audit committee to come up with some, and then just advise the board in December.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any other questions or discussion on item 5, the finance and audit committee? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to item number 6, which is the executive committee. The first item is to report on the status of the proposed amendments to the plan of operation. And this is just for our new members. The latest version, the existing version of the plan of operation is from 2011. And this past session, we had some legislation that amended the Guarantee Act. And so we, in addition to updating the plan of operation to include those changes, we took the opportunity to go back and really clean it up dramatically, to clarify some things that had just been holdovers back, some of them from the 90s, and just to get rid of anything that wasn't still pertinent.
So Betsy, can I stop you for 1 second? Whoever's calling in on the phone, if they could mute themselves, I'm getting a ton of feedback.
Yeah, same.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Then the we sent our proposed changes to TDI, who reviewed it, and they reported back with a few suggested changes, and we have recently sent it back to the department. So we will be sending out the final version of the amendments to the plan of operation, or just the final revised plan of operation, to you before the December meeting, so that you know everybody will know. There's no surprises. Like I said, incorporating changes from the last session and just making some grammatical and clarifying changes to the plan. On committee membership, I wanted to wait until our three new members had gotten through their first meeting so they could kind of see what information is brought to the board. And I'll be reaching out to individual board members to talk about kind of their desires. We do keep the committee membership under a quorum. Our committees are advisory, and that's really the only thing that's in flux. In the past, we've also tried not to keep standing committees that don't really have a function, that don't have substantive things to bring to the board. So we had discontinued and decided not to have the claims committee be a standing committee and just use it in an ad hoc manner. I think because we're going to have a significant change in leadership for claims, and since that's the core function of the organization, that we will reinstitute the claims committee. And we've got some strong new members that I think can help us there. I just think the board's going to want to be briefed on a more regular basis on that transition and, you know, how things are going, especially in this environment of additional, we're just seeing more insolvencies coming our way right now. So that's really it for the executive committee update. Does anybody have any questions on that?
I think I hear you calling Mark's name to a committee. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I'm seeing those committees expand there a little bit.
Okay, you're very intuitive, Mike. Next, we'll move on to item number 7, the Human Resources Committee, and Mike Wilson, the chair, will lead us off.
Thank you. Our last board meeting was June 11th, and if you recall, right about that time, it became clear that there was a second wave of infections with COVID-19, and by that June meeting, the association had already begun phasing back in office employees on a rotating basis and certainly within the guidance. But as of moving along in the middle of June, and then it appeared that we were going to have this second wave coming up, we actually had a human resources committee meeting on June 24th, where the topic of discussion focused on a lot on that sort of unexpected turn of events since the time of the board meeting. And at that time, management had already made a decision to roll back the in-office presence and return people to working remotely to a much greater extent. We discussed also at that time the role of contractors and whether they're working and presently in the office or at home, and the capabilities of keeping them at home. So that was the focus of the June HR meeting. We had another HR committee meeting on August 27th, and we turned there to some of the operational aspects of how do we maintain both remote teleworking environment and also deal with the added risk of having contractors on site in the future. And as I understand it, as we speak now, there are nine contractors who are attached to the claims operation. Is that correct, Verda? Nine or ten?
But none of them are on site.
Right. So we have...
I'm sorry, we have nine, and then we have one IT contractor for a total of 10, but none of them are on site.
And the IT contractor may be on site some?
No, none of them are on site.
Okay. So the discussion in the committee meeting is that as I understood it, we had no contractors on site as of that point in time. But that there would be a point in time in the future, we don't know if it would be months or if it could be next year, that we would have an environment where we're bringing third parties back on site to work on some basis. And we urged management to start preparing for that eventuality. Historically speaking, the contracts with the adjusting service providers that are providing contractors did not include much in the way of risk shifting with respect to exposures that could happen in the workplace. And it was generally speaking, if a contractor was injured or had some type of a claim against the association, there was really nothing in the agreement that shifted that risk off of the association. As you've heard from Marvin's discussion earlier, the association has been very diligent about following health official guidance with respect to in-office procedures for COVID-19. However, the other realization is that science doesn't know where this disease is going to go, what the real exposures are, and frankly, what are the best practices to deal with that. So there's a lot unknown at this point in time, and we ask management to discuss the potential of revising the service agreements to include some risk shifting off of the association for contractor exposures to COVID-19 on site. For example, injuries or death that might result from their exposure to COVID-19 on site. And if the HR committee meeting, we reviewed some wording. Joe Betsy, we actually had a draft from Shelby. It had been passed by the internal attorney for the association. And we reviewed some of that wording and a bit unsettled about the enforceability about it. And as I understand it, it's still a work in progress. And Verda, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, if it's gone beyond that, chime in and let us know. But I don't believe we have a actual agreement in the board packet or something that we're proposing that the board adopt.
Mike, I believe that Shelby has plans to discuss that during a different portion of the board meeting.
Okay.
The materials, Mike, are behind the executive session tab. Okay. It's a legal document, and legal advice will be involved. And the draft of the amendment is in those materials.
Okay. Thanks for that correction. So the other aspect of that had to do with the telecommuting policy. And that tied in some way, say, ways to it because of the language that was being used between the two agreements. And I'll let Verda discuss where we're at on that policy, telecommuting policy draft.
The policy was included in your board book on page 3. You wanted to follow along with it. We originally drafted the policy to address only the pandemic, and we then decided it made more sense to broaden it so that if we wanted to use it at different portions of the year, we would have that flexibility. So it's drafted with that in mind. It addresses the current situation, but then if we chose to expand it to cover other situations or make it a voluntary program at some point, we built in that flexibility with the plan. The requirements for employees would be the same as if they were working in the office. They still have to meet the performance standards just as if they were here. They still have to be responsive. They still have to follow the policies and procedures. They still have to follow schedules that have been established. So the difference is they would be working from a remote location versus working here, but they still have to stay in touch with their peers, with their supervisor. All of those things are included within the document. And anyone that wanted to participate in the plan voluntarily would have to meet the requirements that would ultimately be approved by Marvin. It's not something that would be guaranteed. It would be looked at on a case-by-case basis, and every position would not be eligible because some jobs, just as the current situation, some jobs cannot be performed remotely. Some jobs must be performed on site. So the plan would be if the situation was appropriate and if there was a reason to allow it, then Marvin may approve that. For most situations, we would look at if we needed to go to a situation where people are working remotely, we would have everything in place to make sure that we can continue functioning as we've done over the last 2 months. I can go through the entire policy, but really those are the high points. It's a flexible policy. Performance standards are the same. It has to be approved by the management team. Employees will continue to have expectations to meet. Expenses will be incurred on a case-by-case basis to be pre-approved by the director. If it is something that is not required by TPCIGA, TPCIGA will provide equipment. TPCIGA will maintain TPCIGA's equipment. If the employee is providing equipment, the employee is responsible for maintaining their equipment. But I think that we've covered pretty much within the policy. I will ask my peers if there is anything that we have overlooked in the policy that came to mind in the last minute. Or Shelby. Shelby was very helpful in going through it and crafting some and making some of the fine tuning to the document.
So one of the discussions that Marvin had earlier, as I understand it, we have plus or minus 18 employees in the office on a daily basis, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's out of something like 49 or so total, 10 of which are contractors.
Correct.
And has management any current plans to increase the density of in-office work environment in the near future?
I believe, as I understand it, that the intent would be to continue to learn what the virus is going to do, and that would really determine how we would react in the future. For right now, we are continuing to operate, getting claims processed, having people on site 5 days a week that must be here, being flexible, having other people come on periodically a couple of days a week so that we're not too dense within the site. And I think that we'll continue working in under those conditions unless something changes immediately, which it doesn't seem that that's going to happen.
Are there any questions about the telecommuting policy? Okay, so the next item on it was a discussion of the audiovisual project wrap-up. And Verda, will you let us know where we're at on that?
We are done with the project. Everything has been set up within the boardroom. We're using it right now to conduct this meeting. Our cameras have been put in place. We have the mics that we're using. And we're continuing to learn about capabilities, but all in all, it's working very well for us. We have the new screens in place and the computers working very well. So so far it's working quite nicely. We have ordered the Trio or the Polygon Trio model, and it's in transit, and we will have that in place as well. So everything is either in place, done, or on the way and ready to be finished.
So Verda, one thing at the beginning. At the beginning, when Marvin was talking, I felt like he was distant from the mic, and I mentioned that. And then I think maybe John Peters mentioned some similar comment. It seems like the mic might be too high or too far away, and so there sounds like to be a little bit of echo or distance between the speaker and the mic.
Right. We're still calibrating. We will get that right. This is, I think, the second actual meeting that we've had using the equipment. I'm sure that there's a way that we'll be able to increase the input, if you will, on the mic so that we wouldn't have that problem. But we have multiple mics in the room. That is what caused the feedback that we've heard from time to time, such as during the board member orientation. We've found a way to resolve that problem. And we'll continue learning how to address these. But from a volume standpoint, I'm pretty sure that we'll be able to increase the volume on the mic.
Okay, Verda, do you have anything more to say on the 2021 budget items than what we already discussed with Tiffany?
No, I don't. I understand Garrick wants us to go back and take a look at what is being planned publicly for merit increases, and we'll take a look at that and provide some information should the board decide to move forward with making that change. But other than that, I think that everything has been included in the book.
Okay. So the next item is the review of HR status reports for Michelle, Larry, and Mark. What we've done in the HR section of the board book, toward the back, you'll see that there's a monthly staffing report. There's a discussion about the positions and the various employees attached to each position. And then starting on page 15 through the 17 or 18, there's a summary of the employee benefits. These are regular reporting items for the HR committee. And you'll find them in the board book. If you have any questions about any elements of that, Verd is the person to answer those questions. I'll say that last year, the year before, there was some fairly intense focus on aligning employee benefits with the marketplace and with a view to the public purposes of this statutory association. So we made some significant changes to benefits. We went to a paid time off policy, which I think you've probably been briefed on. in the board member boot camp that you went to. But if you have any questions about any of those items, obviously, Averta's prepared to answer. Averta, is there anything that you'd like to add on the HR status report?
There was an item added to the agenda regarding the status of the backfill for our claims director, who will be leaving us later this year. And I put together a schedule based on your input, saying that you wanted to be involved throughout the process, as well as an alternative should you want to take a look at that, that really followed the process that we followed in recruiting John. And we'll be able to get everything taken care of to get the position posted on several websites, to get interviews scheduled, to get checks, background checks required, et cetera. And we expect that we'd be able to get an offer extended in November and have someone on board either by the end of November or certainly into December.
I know that we had previously talked about Mike Wilson participating in that process, and I think it might be helpful to go ahead and have Mark T. also participate just because of his extensive claim management experience. Just, I know it's going to all be virtual. Is that something you could accommodate?
So both Mike and Mark will participate.
Yep. Isn't that correct, Mike? Didn't you already?
Yeah, we talked, I can't remember now if it was March or June, actually, but afterwards, I met with Jesse and Marvin and Verda and discussed sort of the process for them to have the prospects and then to reduce the list to a final number of candidates that then I would like to then have a discussion with. And that would, I think it'd certainly be appropriate for Mark T. to be involved in that, not necessarily at the same time, but at some point in that process. And Roberta, can you, it's been so many months that I can't remember, you know, we had some definite numbers attached to how many people you were going to have for us to be able to talk to at that point in the process. And you have some notes on that?
It's really difficult to say until we see what the responses are like. We will post it on several websites, ACA, for example, NCIGF, NAIC, and ZipRecruiter. We were very, very successful in following that format in recruiting the CFO. We will also give employees that are internal that may be interested in applying for the position, give them the opportunity as well. And once we see what we receive in response to the position opening, then we'll be able to determine the number of candidates that we want to participate in for initial screening interviews. And then we would narrow the screening interviews down to having longer interviews. Probably that would be when you would want to participate in those interviews. And once those secondary interviews take place, we would narrow it down to the finalists, and then from the finalists, then we would actually select a person to extend the offer to.
Yeah, I think if I recall, I was envisioning having a discussion with the last, you know, two, three, or four candidates, however many are available at that point in the process that's been filtered out. But I had wanted to see actual resumes on folks who had already made it to the point where they were being in-depth interviewed.
Okay. So not the initial screening is what you're saying, not the initial screening, but once we get past that initial screening stage, the folks that we are going to go to the second level of interview, or you want to see all of those resumes. Is
right.
Am I understanding it?
Right.
Okay. We will do that.
Yeah, I'd be very willing to be a part of that process, so thank you.
Very good. We will make that happen.
Any further business, Averta?
I have a question regarding the telecommuting policy. Will there be any action taken, or will there be discussion at a next board meeting, or is there something else that you need for us to provide? Or how do we want to proceed with that from the board's
perspective? I'm satisfied with the draft as written, we did not, you know, vote as a committee to recommend anything to the board, but if the board is ready to take action on the telecommuting policy at this time, I think it'd be appropriate.
Does anybody object to going ahead and having a vote on the telecommuting policy today? If not, then Mike, are you making the motion?
Yes, I will move that the board adopt the telecommuting policy as shown in the draft in the HR section of the board book, starting on page 3.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
That's David Nardecchia makes the second. Any questions or discussion on the telecommuting policy? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Is there anything else on the Human Resources Committee? Any other discussion, questions? Okay, I would like to go back and revisit the Finance and Audit Committee before we go into executive session. I checked the minutes from our June meeting and do not see that we voted to retain Plant Moran to conduct the upcoming audit. And so I would like to go ahead and have the board take action on that today. Tiffany, could you make the motion?
Yes, so I will make a motion then that we continue forward with Plant Moran for the 2021 audit with the items to be determined over the next 6 to 8 weeks by the Finance Committee.
I'll second that.
Okay, Mike Garrett makes a second. Are there any questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed or abstentions? Then the motion carries unanimously. Thank you so much. All right. The time is now 10:48, and the board will go into executive session pursuant to sections 551.071 and 551.074 of the Texas Government Code to discuss and deliberate on potential personnel matters and to consult with the general counsel and receive legal advice on a proposal to amend contractor agreements to limit liability related to COVID-19 and issues arising out of the Texas Open Meetings Act, the litigation report, and any of the other agenda items.
Chair, do you want to do the claim summary report by Jesse Bowie before we go into executive session?
I'm so sorry. I skipped right over it. Thank you, Marvin, for... Just hold that thought then. We will come back and repeat our adjournment into executive session. So let's hear from Jesse.
Thank you.
Good morning.
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 We're going to go to the claims tab in your book. The first page of that tab is just going to be the highlights of the 8 documents that make up the claims like PAC. So we'll start with that, and that's called the claim summary for the second quarter of 2020. You know, as you've heard, we've had a lot of activity in 2020, beginning in March when Windhaven National Insurance Company went into liquidation. We started getting the claims that came out of that estate during the second quarter. I think we got about 800 claims from that. So from that first bullet on the summary page, obviously claims have increased. For the second quarter, they increased by about 43%. With an additional 25% up through August 31st. With that overall inventory, that made our litigation rise by 46%. That litigation, they're subject to a 6-month stay, so there's really no activity on that. Regarding the Windhaven claims, we're going to see more litigation activity probably beginning now. There are no trials set, but we're gonna start seeing more activity and more defense fees that's going to be incurred in defending us. During the second quarter, we did lose two claims employees through, I think, a retirement, and one just decided that she wanted to move. So that happened during the second quarter. We did have to add four contractors to address the Wind Haven insolvency, and just in prep for the other insolvency that we knew that was coming in. Of course, you know, there's unearned premium claims. Those claims, unearned premium claims traditionally are, we get those claims in the latter part of an insolvency because we are very dependent on the information that the receiver gives us, since they have the underwriting information. Sometimes we get UEP claims in, sometimes we don't. During this last quarter, they increased by about 9%. But then again, as you can see up through the end of August, we were able to run some of those off through payments and closings. So there was a decrease between the second quarter and August. One of the primary things that we do, we seriously go after recoveries, as in subrogation, net worth, and deductible recoveries. So during this quarter, there were about $355,000 in collections made. We have the philosophy that every dollar that we could collect in recoveries is a dollar that doesn't have to be assessed. So we try to be very aggressive in that. Workers' compensation, for a long part, that is what we did. I mean, that made up greater than 50% of the claims that we handled. Well, that's almost flipped with the insolvencies that we received, including Med-Mal claims and, of course, the non-statutory auto claims. But because of those workers' compensation claims, we continue to get medical bills in. We have a very aggressive cost containment unit. As you can see from that bullet point, although $6.9 million was billed to us, we only wound up paying 1.8 of that through our cost containment programs and fee guidelines. That represented a 71% gross savings. We've had a lot of activity. I think at the end of last year, we were down to the, we had the lowest volume count of claims that I've seen since in my 26 years here. Well, since that time, we've really got a lot of activity in, and again, we're expecting more. Gateway Insurance Company was domiciled out of Illinois, and they were liquidated in June. We got around 460 claims from Gateway. They deal primarily in common carrier liability, taxi cabs, buses, things like that. There were three other insolvencies that happened on the same day. Houston General Insurance Exchange was a domestic insolvency, and American Country Insurance Company and American Services Company, they were affiliated with Gateway out of Illinois. We have an idea of what claims we're going to get on Houston General. They are a non-standard auto carrier as well, but as yet we have not received those files. During the first report, when we first talked about this, the claims count report was at 266. At the time of the liquidations, the number went up to 500. From historical experience, we can expect to get around 750 claims on that insolvency. With American Country Insurance and American Services Insurance Company, we finally just got the files on those. That number came out to about 40. We are going to have to add another contractor. Right now, our contractors, particularly our property and casualty contractors, the one that handle the non-standard auto claims, their average file inventories are higher than what they really should be handling. I think they are averaging about 225 files per person. That was planned. When we start thinking about the type of claims that we were going to get in, I made the decision to give them a little bit more, to give the PNC adjusters a little bit more claims than probably the industry standard called for, just so we could get a sense on how those files were and how fast they were going to run off. But again, I think we are going to have to add another contractor, maybe two, depending on what we get out of Houston General. Any questions?
Jesse, thank you for extending your retirement date. Glad you're still with us.
Thank you.
That's been a real blessing. Thank you, Jesse. We all appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
This very is much
a so. Temporary thing. I can't believe I've been doing it for 43 years. Thank you.
Let's see, I had one question.
Yes.
This is Larry Bruning. When you say litigation increased, are you talking about the house litigation measured in counts? You're talking about the number of counts filed in the case?
Yes. We're talking about the actual litigation claim files. Yes. Lawsuits.
Thank you.
There's a lot of talk about unpaid claims. And from a claims perspective, I don't relate to unpaid claim numbers. I need to know about file numbers. And I'm sure Mark can understand that. Now, tell me how many files I have so I know how many adjusters that I'm going to need. So it's interesting on what we heard today on what the counts are going to be and how many contractors we're going to need in the future. Thank you.
Any other questions on the this or previous agenda items? All right, then. Hearing none, we'll try this again. It's now 10:58, and as authorized by sections 551.071 and 551.074 of the Texas Government Code, the board will adjourn into closed executive session to discuss and deliberate on personnel matters and consult with the general counsel and receive legal advice on a proposal to amend contractor agreements to limit liability related to COVID-19 and issues arising out of the Texas Open Meetings Act, a litigation report, and any agenda items.
Chair?
Uh-huh.
So now, as you all go into the executive session, if you would please go to the Outlook invite, you're going to exit this meeting and you're going to go into the second Zoom invite. Joe Betsy, I'm going to move you over to the host and I'm going to vacate and exit the meeting, and then it'll be your meeting to work through. I guess, could you all just communicate with Demetria when we need to resume again and we'll re-enter the...
Yeah, but hold for 1 second, though. So I guess going into this executive session, sometimes we have executive session where we have staff because we need them to answer questions.
Okay.
And sometimes we have executive session where we deliberate solely among the board.
Yes.
If we have, I'm just wanting to confirm, do we have some issues that need to be board only?
I don't think there are.
Well, I'm asking the board members.
Yes.
So if
I do not,
then I'm trying to figure out, can we not just do what we did with the TDI, and maybe the TDI folks could just be in the waiting room if they want to stick around? I thought we were going to use the additional dial-in option only if we had a board-only executive session.
No, that's fair.
No, not anymore.
Yeah, no, TDI. Somebody is. Yeah, we can.
Now, if it's cleaner, I'm fine doing the dial in. So we'll click on this for this session, then click again to go back into the open session.
You all can stay where you are. Yeah, Demetria is working through the folks to put them in the waiting room if they need to.
Yeah.
So it'll just be.
You don't have to call.
It'll just be TPC and the board.
Okay.
Okay. And so we can fix that second one for now.
Okay. So we're already off the record in executive session. Do y'all want to take a quick five?